Tonight, the night for this. Any questions?
Well, the question you didn't ask was on here for sure.
Yeah.
Test number one, file six. We'll be correcting this at about 25 minutes. Don't forget to answer the back. This should be real easy to do.
Thank you.
How many need more time? Let's trade papers and correct it. Correct with a different color. Write in all the right answers. Keep track of minus points. What are the names of the following manuscripts? P52, John Ryland's manuscript. Or just Ryland's. P45, 46, and 47, Chester Beatty. Manuscript A, Alexandrinus. And if it's spelled close enough so that you could make it out, give him credit. Alexandrinus. Aleph is Sinaiticus. P66 is Bodmer. B is Vaticanus. B2 is Vaticanus. C is Ephraemi Rescriptus. D is Beza. W is Freer or Washingtonensis. Section 2, matching. A, book hand large letters, is 1, uncial. From the Latin meaning inch high, uncial. Writing style not restricted to one period of history is either uncial or cursive. Minuscule is restricted to 9th, 10th century or later. D, non-literary writing style, is cursive. E, modified uncial, is minuscule.
Could you give us the number?
D is 3, E is 4. F, manuscripts dating prior to the 10th century, 1, uncial. G, a manuscript scraped and rewritten, is 2, a plimpsest. H, replaced uncial writing by the end of the 10th century, is 4, minuscule. I, writing used for receipts and letters, 3, cursive. J, carefully drawn letters, 1, uncial. K, formalized cursive writing for books, minuscule. 4. L, less than 50 New Testament manuscripts, 2 palimpsest, there are about 50. M, most unusual for a New Testament manuscript, palimpsest, 2. It would be impossible, 3.
That'd be really unusual.
Yeah, let's let that go. 2 or 3. Yeah, 2 or 3 there. And 90% of Greek New Testament manuscripts are 4, minuscule. 3, matching. 1, uncial. Unseal is C, 3rd to 9th century. 2 papyri is A, 1st to 3rd century. 3 minuscule is B, 9th to 15th century. Four, describe briefly, and if it sounds good, give them credit. Papyrus is writing material made from a reed plant growing along the Nile River, and you can describe how they split the stalk and scraped out the pith and laid it perpendicular in strips. Basically a reed product. Parchment is leather, writing material made from animal skins. Five, what century do each of the following manuscripts date from? Date by century. If you don't date by century, you have to have it exactly right. A. Ryland's the 2nd century, 125. 2nd century, 125. Vaticanus is 4th century, 350. Sinaiticus is 4th century, 375. Alexandrinus is 5th century, 425. Rescriptus is 5th century, 450. Beza is 5th to 6th century. Chester Beatty is 3rd century. Bodmer is 3rd century. You could put down there's one in the 7th century. If you just put 3rd, it's correct. Qumran 5 is 1st century. Beatty 3rd, Bodmer 3rd. 1st century. Go ahead. What? No, 5th or 6th. Technically, it would go down as 6th if you were to just put down 1 century. But let's not make a big deal about that. Yes. Number wrong at the top of the page. If they have the right century, we'll give them credit. Cross off the exact date that's now wrong, that's inexact. Just put a line through it. N is minuscule. L, well, yeah, 0 is less than 50, so you could put 3 there as well, I suppose. That would fit. Yeah, we'd accept that. That's fine. Any other questions? Look over your papers, and if you're satisfied, turn it in. If you're not, turn it in. Do you want to have the quiz we missed last week next hour, or do you want to wait till next week?
It was the same quiz we have next hour. Okay. Yeah, we
mm-hmm. Okay, next week, another little quiz like this. Same material. No, next week. And we have an assignment due tonight. Let's go over that. What assignment is that? 1 John 5, 7. We'll look at that.
Thank you.
What did you decide on 1 John 5, 7? You omitted it. You did? How could you? How many... Remember we said D rating meant a high degree of doubt, A rating meant virtually certain. How many gave it a D rating, omitting it? C rating... B rating, A rating. Most people gave it an A rating. You felt that it was certainly omitted. Did anybody read Metzger's book in the library on it? How about his... His book on textual criticism. Did anybody read that? Yeah. Where he talked about the origin of the verse?
No. He referred you to it.
Oh, well, you read the commentary, but you didn't read his work on textual criticism. Let me get that really quick. And I'll read you a section out of it. This little book, The Text of the New Testament, by Metzger. Let's see, scriptural references, 1 John 5, 7, page 101, it looks like. Manuscript section, it's the door that you go into the tape section. It's just right on your right bottom shelf. Let's see. Among the criticism leveled at Erasmus, one of the most serious appeared to be the charge of Stunica, one of the editors of the Complutensian Polyglot. That was a Catholic edition. That his text lacked part of the final chapter of 1 John. Namely, the Trinitarian statement concerning the Father, the Word, and the Holy Ghost. And these three are one. There are three that bear record, bear witness in earth. Erasmus replied that he had not found any Greek manuscript containing these words, though he had in the meanwhile examined several others besides those on which he relied when first preparing his text. Remember, he made his first text, 1516. In an unguarded moment, Erasmus promised that he would insert, it's now called the Comma Johannium, as it is called, in future editions, if a single Greek manuscript could be found that contained the passage. At length, such a copy was found, or was made to order. As it now appears, the Greek manuscript had probably been written in Oxford about 1520 by a Franciscan friar named Roy, who took the disputed words from the Latin Vulgate. Erasmus stood by his promise and inserted the passage in his third edition, 1522. But he indicates in a lengthy footnote his suspicions, and the manuscript had been prepared expressly in order to confute him. The Codex, number 61, is today in the library of Trinity College, Dublin. It opens almost of its own accord at 1 John 5. So often has it been consulted at this passage. It's like, have to see it to believe it. Well, 61 is dated 15th century by Metzger here. So, or by the commentary. They think it was made in 1520. Among the thousands of Greek manuscripts of the New Testament examined since the time of Erasmus, only three others are known to contain this spurious passage. They are 88, a 12th century manuscript, which has the verses written in the margin by a 17th century hand, and one, let's see, a manuscript that Tischendorf labels 110, which is a 16th century manuscript, a copy of the Complutensian, which doesn't give it very much weight, and 629, dating from the 14th, or the latter half of the 16th century. The oldest known citation of 1 John 5:7 is in a 4th century Latin treatise. This passage probably originated as a piece of allegorical exegesis of the three witnesses and may have been written as a marginal gloss in a Latin manuscript of 1 John, whence it was taken into the text of the Old Latin Bible during the 5th century. The passage does not appear in manuscripts of the Latin Vulgate before AD 800. That is really weakening its authority when it can't be found even in a Latin version before 800. In view of its inclusion in the Clementine edition of the Latin Vulgate, 1592, in 1897, the Holy Office in Rome made an authoritative pronouncement, approved and confirmed by Pope Leo XIII, that it is not safe to deny that this verse is an authentic part of John's epistle. Now, when the Pope thus speaketh, the Catholic Church listeneth. Modern Roman Catholic scholars, however, recognize that the words do not belong in the Greek New Testament. That's the trouble with modern Roman Catholic scholars. They often differ with the Pope and go by the straight information. For example, the four bilingual editions of the New Testament that were edited by Bover, Merck, and Vogels include the words as part of the Vulgate text approved by the Council of Trent, but reject them from the Greek text that faces the Latin on the opposite page. Well, we haven't studied those yet, but we will later on. Later, Erasmus issued a fourth and definitive edition, 1527, which contains the text of the New Testament in three parallel columns. I believe he omitted 1 John 5:7 in that. So, but being in his third edition, 1520, it found its way into the King James Bible, and having got into the King James Bible, it is of course almost impossible to rid it without being accused of heresy and all kinds of other things. But it's really a textual matter, it's not a theological matter. Karl Brumbach in his book argues that people that reject 1 John 5:7 are oneness and they have a theological bias. That's why they reject it. But if you'll notice, Metzger is not a oneness, and he and probably 99% of all scholars reject it, and to them, it's not a Trinitarian or oneness issue, it's a textual issue. It's not even a theological, there's no theological prejudice because they're all Trinitarian. Any comments that you want to make on it? Go ahead.
Just a question on reading the apparatus here, when they've got this, the first text they use is 221 with the margin and then 2318. What are those? Why are they in there? Do you know what I'm talking about? Where? Right here. What's this? And then he gets
okay.
Manuscript. Then the only waiter on this is in 2188. I couldn't tell what they were or what they were saying. Thank you.
In my edition, I can't find that 5. What was it, manuscript?
221 of the margin.
I can't find that. What page are you on?
I'm on page 824. Is that a third edition?
That's a more updated edition.
Yes, third edition corrected.
Okay, they've got a few changes in there that are different than what I have as a second edition. Evidently, those are additional manuscripts that have portions of it in the margin. Since they have it in the middle of the reading, they're saying those manuscripts have either a phrase or a clause. And so it's kind of a variant within the variant. And that would be, since the date of this book, Metzger's little book here, 1968, and that third edition is in the 70s. So, updated information. Another question. Go ahead.
How do they rate church fathers? I mean, who has more weight than...
The early ones have more weight, and it depends on the variant. It depends on if the church father quoted it different ways in his own writings. That lessens his authority. It's basically the type of variant. Now, in this variant here, the fact that no church father or even any writing even refers to the verse before the 4th century is real negative towards this passage. Should there be a couple of church fathers quoting it in the 2nd century or 3rd century, you know, that would really be a voice that that there was something. So, in omissions and additions, church fathers have some weight. They really have a voice. But in other types of variants, they may not have much of a weight, depending on the type of variant. Now, how much weight do they have compared to Greek manuscripts? They always have less, even though their dates are early. Because the fact that that church father quoted it is a testimony that there must have been some manuscript in his day and age that had it in. But then when later manuscripts have it out and it's a real overwhelming thing, the thinking is that later manuscripts textually felt there was a little support for that verse. In the fourth century, there was a certain amount of textual criticism that was exercised over the second and third century manuscripts. And so there's a... That's what manuscript B and Aleph must be. And so they're probably produced by churches or by groups because they're so well done. They'd have been very expensive to make those. And copy houses did make them and sell them. But they're it looks like there's considerable care in those manuscripts, and so they have a lot more weight than maybe Origen referring to something somewhere.
Who are generally...
The top three are Irenaeus, Origen, and Tertullian. And then any others in the second, third century would be. Also, if we're going to use church fathers, I might say this. You should probably use the third edition. Because in the third edition, they reviewed many of the quotations that supposedly come from the church fathers, and they eliminated a lot of them out of the apparatus, feeling like it wasn't certain enough. There was some ambiguities. There was reading into the text. There was various other things, and they felt like it wasn't a substantial witness, so they eliminated it quite a bit. And so what's left in the third edition is very clear-cut, unambiguous quotations that definitely refer to that passage, and it's then tangible, concrete evidence. Whereas before, there was a feeling like well, there just wasn't the respect, let's say, for the apparatus concerning the church fathers. Nestle's text is the most recent one, has been brought into uniformity with UBS in Nestle's 26th edition, which originally came out about the late 1800s. It's now to this 26th edition. It is produced by the Bible societies also. And they've decided to bring it and the third edition of UBS into total conformity. But the apparatuses differ, at least in their arrangement. But the text is the same. That 26th edition also has a very conservative apparatus of church fathers. And so if I was going to do any work with church fathers, I would make sure I use the third edition of UBS and not trust the other ones. Another question. Well, Nestle's text is a completely different text than UBS. I mean, it was done by a different group of people. And so their 26th edition, they have made it exact with the third edition of UBS.
As far as the Greek.
Whereas before that, they were not the same. Yes. Mm-hmm. Feeling like the differences between them were so slight, and that the same committee that produced the third edition of UBS was now in charge of Nestle, and obviously they're not going to publish something they don't agree with. So they went through and changed Nestle's to conform to UBS.
So basically,
the same thing. 26th line is going to line up with the UBS. There may not be a 27th, unless they change UBS. So, and they probably will change UBS as time goes on. It's amazing how many changes there are from the second to third edition.
After I had done this, I pulled a couple of commentaries, and it's amazing just how they disagree, because Adams Clark says that even though he believes in the Holy Trinity, it's unlikely this verse is genuine, but Lenski says that the verse is accurate.
Mm-hmm. Adam Clark's writing in 1810, so he thinks it's not accurate, and Adam Clark is more scholarly, more into all kinds of facts and figures. Lenski is more spiritual and into the theology and the heart and the meaning of the text, and it's like he's got more of a spiritual angle and maybe is more prejudiced that way. So he's arguing for it. Yeah, the commentaries really are different on this. The more critical commentaries are going to reject the verse. The more spiritual commentaries are going to accept the verse. That's the way it is. And they... Matthew Henry, yes. Of course, he's writing way back in the 1700s. But even then, it's not a matter of modern textual criticism has uncovered a lot to refute the verse. There never was any evidence for the verse at the very beginning. The fact that it got in the King James is a fluke. So, Matthew Henry arguing for the verse, in my opinion, this is because they're theologically prejudiced and emotionally involved with the theology and arguing from that basis. And I'm sure that's what Lenski's doing. And I'm going to be doing that myself later on. I don't do it for this passage, although if the passage is really authentic, which I think the evidence is really against it, it's really stacked. If it was authentic, then I would interpret it as three witnesses, not three separate persons of the Godhead, but three witnesses. And I think I could make sense of the verse and hold on to my theology. So I'd interpret it in light of my theology. Maybe not quite take every little piece of it totally literal, but let's just say there are three witness bearers. Do they bear record in heaven? In a sense, yeah. They bear record in eternity. They bear record in the spiritual realm. They bear record in earth too, but they bear record of these things to be true, and yes, they do bear record. They're three. The thing about and the whole idea is coming from, let every word be established in the mouth of two or three witnesses. In Jewish law, if you had two or three witnesses, a matter was considered settled, and that's why it carries over in the New Testament. Jesus in John 8 appealed to I bear witness, and my Father bears witness through the power that he's given me in the miracles. And there's your two witnesses. And it's over in the New Testament. You know, receive not an accusation against an elder, but the mouth of two or three witnesses. In other words, there's that appeal to having more witness. And then in the Old Testament, you read, heaven and earth bear record. You know, there's your two witnesses. Of course, a metaphor appealing to nature, natural things, even bear witness. So here we have three witness bearers of the gospel message, of the plan of salvation, of the truth. You know, I can understand the verse. It would be real easy to write something like that in if you were a theologian and expounding and preaching, and you were even a Trinitarian. You could ad lib in your theology a verse like that or a teaching like that, and eventually it'd be so neat that it actually get written in the text. And of course, thinking they do even know, the earliest reference to it is in this writing in the 4th century. So from that, another question. Go ahead and pass these in. I'll just glance at them. And put your name on them. Then let's go over some more variants. Oh, is the bell?
Yeah.
Let's take a 5-minute break.